Welcome, one and all, to a very long-awaited, very fraught, if you will, episode of The Feminine Critique. I am Emily. I have no problems, so to speak of. One of my co-hostesses had a few problems.
I had a lot of problems. Yeah. Unless you were talking about Erica.
Your whole life is a problem. Well, co-hostess Erica is technically number one, because she was my co-hostess before you, but on the show.
Yeah, I was.
Erica, you folks at home might remember from our Thor Supergirl / the movie We Will Never Talk About Again episode.
Yes, Erica, hello.
Hi. Erica was my co-hostess on GleeCast. And in honor of something we had started doing on GleeCast, we have reunited tonight to begin our GleeCast and the Furious episodes, have we not?
We certainly have. I'm very excited about it.
Indeed. Now, as we explained on the last episode, we covered the Fast and the Furious on a GleeCast episode. I posted that link on the Facebook page for the Feminine Critique, so if you want to know what Erica and I thought of the first Fast and the Furious movie, you can go there. Today we're going to talk about Too Fast. That is the number two, everybody, not T-double-O.
I couldn't find it. Like, when I was looking for it to log, I was like, how the hell is this movie titled?
That's the thing. And these are just going to get tougher because, like, none of them have numbers in the title. Or does 6 have numbers? Is it, like, Fast 6?
It might be Fast 6. Wait, I'll look into it. You keep talking.
Okay, because they're going to run out of ways to say the Fast and the Furious. Because then the fourth one, they just took out the articles, and then the fifth one, they took out the other linking words and so on. It's kind of fascinating, in a way. And as, like, a language person, I can kind of appreciate it, but it also is really annoying. Because you're right, it's hard to find. I don't know which number is which.
So it's Fast ampersand Furious 6.
Oh, so they did, finally, they gave up, and they started using numbers.
Yeah, and it looks like, after Fast 5, because the fifth one was Fast 5. Okay. The fourth one was Fast and Furious.
I'm surprised.
Why can't it just be Fast 6?
Or 6 Furious.
Oh, see, now you're just crazy talking.
Fura 6. That's what I would have called it. It works for Scriforum. Remember Scream 4, a.k.a. Scriforum?
I don't think that works.
Well, you're right. That movie didn't do so well in the box office. Now we're going to pair. Oh, yes.
You know what? It has, like, on IMDb, when you look them up, for 5, it does say Fast and Furious 5, and then underneath it, it says Fast 5. And I just realized under Fast and Furious 6, it does say Furious 6.
Oh, nice. See? Yeah.
Yeah, no. That was all you.
That's right.
Yep, you just named it. IMDb changed it while I was looking at it.
I do what I can. They are quick over there, those little internet trolls. Now, what are we going to pair with Too Fast, Too Furious, ladies?
Well, naturally, we would pair it with Saving Private Ryan. I don't know.
I couldn't even think of anything else to match it with.
Yeah. I mean, it's the double bill that plays, like, almost every month, I think, in most grindhouse cinemas. So it made sense. That's what we're pairing it with. So we'll get to that. Now, before we get to that, we should talk about other things in the world happening now. Primarily, like, other stuff we've been watching, because that's how we roll.
Oh, God, I was afraid that I didn't prepare for this segment.
I was going to ask you about the political situation in Ukraine, but I thought better of it.
Oh, good, because you don't want to hear my opinions on that.
Neither do the people of the Feminine Critique listening ship, or so. Who wants to start?
I'll start, because I don't have very much.
Oh, I know what you have! I know what you have! I know what you have!
I know you know it. I'm going to save that for last now, just to torture you.
Everybody, spoiler alert, Erica's going to talk about something really awesome after she talks about whatever else she's going to talk about.
Doesn't she always talk about awesome stuff?
Yeah, but this is more awesome than Erica. And you, and me, and everyone.
Oh, wow.
It's more awesome than the entire world.
It's more awesome than my cats.
So I'll preface with a short story. In my house, we used to have a tenant downstairs, and one day she just, poof, disappeared, left all her shit behind. Like, no idea what happened to her, where she went. It's been about 3 months
now. She was raptured?
She might have been, except we saw her get in a truck and drive away, and she just never came back and never answered any phone calls.
She was joyrided.
Oh, gosh. Oh, my goodness. Lily Sobieski'd.
It's true. That could have happened. But since she left all her stuff behind, and it's been over 3 months since we heard from her, we finally got me and my brother finally got to go and go through her DVD collection, which was like the most exciting thing of my week 2 weeks ago, because apparently she and I have very similar taste in film. Nice. She had like every horror movie ever. And then, of course, I'm going to name two movies that I watched from her collection that aren't horror movies. But it was, she owns Ginger Snaps, which is exciting for me because I can never find it on DVD. Mm-hmm. I didn't watch that, though. So anyway, that's where my two movies that I watched recently came from her pile, because it was a very exciting time. So the first thing I watched was Away We Go, which I rewatched because NOTLP covered it.
That's the John Krasinski and... Yep. Oh, I still haven't seen that.
Oh, well, I own it now. You can borrow it.
Yay, woohoo! Thanks, Tenet.
I had seen it before, but I enjoy it, so I rewatched it. There's not that much to say about it. The second thing I watched will be exciting for Christine. I rewatched X-Men First Class.
Yay, you loved it even more.
I did. I hadn't seen it since theaters.
And, hooray!
It was a very worthwhile rewatch.
It's a fun one.
It got me excited for the... for the new one that's coming out sometime. I don't know when.
May 4th, I think.
Ooh, that's
something. Or 14th. I should know that, but, you know, I slipped.
I feel like the 14th would be the middle of the week.
With a 4th, I can tell you, is a Sunday. So
no.
I just
so neither of those.
Neither
because
of them.
May 4th was the Kentucky Derby party last year / May 4th, so it's May the 4th be with you.
I have the big teaser poster on my wall, too. I just, it's so far away, though.
Yeah, and the 14th is a Wednesday.
So maybe it's the 16th.
It could be the 16th.
Or it could be a Wednesday release. It could be, like, when they do that stuff.
You know what, guys? I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
We'll find out. We're not.
I like how none of us have the energy to like reach over on our computer and look it up online.
How else would we find out?
That's too much. Come on, folks.
Come on, guys. I already have Saving Private Ryan open in IMDb. I can't be changing pages all over the place.
And we don't want to hear Christine clanking away over there.
Yeah, banging cymbals and shit.
That's right.
Let's be realistic here. There's not even a release date right on the front page of May 23rd. Here it is. Okay.
Oh my God, I'm so wrong. They're going to take away my card. I don't know what it says, but they're going to take it away.
Wait. Oh no, I was looking at the wrong. I was going to say, wait, May 23rd is a Sunday, but that's March 23rd. I was in the wrong month. Yeah, it's a Friday. Okay. So yes, that's when it comes out.
Hooray.
So then, I've also watched Frozen like 6 times.
Haven't seen it.
Oh, it's so good. It came out on Blu-ray today. I actually have it playing on mute right now because it's just really pretty. Yeah, I almost have it memorized now. I've seriously watched it way too many times. Finally, the last thing that I've been watching, which is the reason I have not watched too many movies, is I've been watching the HBO series The Wire.
Yeah, you have been.
Oh, well, that's good. I still haven't seen it.
Yeah, you will.
It's very good.
Where are you? Are you still in season 4?
I'm still in season 4. Yeah, I kind of delayed because I work 6 days this week and next week. This past week and this coming week, I'm working 6 days. I've kind of been stalled, but I'm somewhere in the middle of season 4.
I think
episode 5. Okay. I want to smack Weebay's kid.
Oh, Naaman.
Oh, I hate him.
Yeah.
And I want to help the
poor Dookie.
Dookie, yeah.
Dookie's got a rough life.
He does. I feel so bad. But I love that Prez is, like, taking care of him. It makes me happy.
Yep. Season 4 is a good one.
Oh, wait. I just muted it. I can't hear you guys. Wait. Hang on.
And we can hear her. We can finally find out what she's saying about
it. I don't
why
know.
Why would she start talking about us if she accidentally put herself on mute?
Because she doesn't know that we... I don't know how it works, Christine.
Am I back? Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay.
We can hear you the whole time, Miss.
Jeez, Emily, why did you give that up so quick? We could have spent an hour.
If I was just sitting here talking to myself about you guys for an hour, that would have been an interesting show.
It would also be really weird of you to do.
It would be. It would be very strange.
Oh, no. I just like to sit back and talk about my friends. My cat, who I can't find.
Who's not even in my room. Okay, so yeah, so that's what I've been watching. That was the last thing, The Wire, because I've been watching a lot of that. I got through 2 seasons in like 5 days.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. Like, I get really excited when people watch things that I like, because then I can talk to them about it, which is, you know, part of the reason why I'm, like, trying to put Brandon through a very expedited Buffy Angel cycle. Because, like, there's things, like, jokes I can't make yet still. And, like, I would like to get to the, like, to the Anya Xander wedding episode by the time, you know, we get married and stuff, so that I can make these kinds of jokes.
You need to make those jokes. I
know. We're about halfway, not even halfway through season five, so we'll see what we can do. But, yeah, it's, everybody should watch things that I watch, because it makes my life better.
I think you could get there in time.
I'm hoping. All right, Christine, what have you been watching?
Well, speaking of watching things that other people are watching, you guys have to start watching Twisted, please, so I can talk to somebody about it.
That's the one that's on after PLL.
I guess. I don't have regular TV.
Wait, but so you're not caught up on PLL, but you're watching Twisted?
Well, they had the first half of the first season on Netflix Instant. I like it. It's like PLL, but not really.
But you know, it's more like PLL.
PLL. I can't wait for season four. Ugh, so exciting. Eventually, I'll get to see it.
You don't even know what has been revealed, Christine. And then
I can't wait. Is Arya okay, guys?
She had a really tough time recently.
Ugh. So I've been watching Twisted. That was really good. When my back was hurt the first time, I watched a lot of Bates Motel. That is not very good. I do not like it a lot.
But don't you love Vera Farmiga?
Yeah, she's awesome in everything.
She's amazing in that. The show is awful, but she is amazing.
It's trying to do too many different things. Yep. I'm really not into it.
It needs to just be about the two of them, and that's it.
But I couldn't move, so ugh. Other than that, I haven't been watching much. I watched The Fast and the Furious because I had never seen it.
I want to hear your thoughts.
It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Huzzah! For me.
Like, well, I hear it like, yeah, it's awful. It's just like Point Break. So I was like, oh, is it going to be a better version of Point Break? you can't see it, but I'm talking out of the side of my mouth right now.
You can't see it, but I'm muting Christine right now.
It was a better version of Point Break. I didn't really like Point Break.
Yeah, I remember.
So I enjoyed it. I'm excited. I watched that movie. You know that movie, The Tall Man?
Oh, this was the Martyrs guy, one with Jessica Biel.
Yep.
Okay, what'd you think?
I have a lot of problems with it. We should talk about it on the show. I think it would be interesting.
It would be an interesting one. Erica, did you see it?
No, I've never even heard of it.
It was on Instant. Would you watch it on Instant?
Yeah, it's still streaming.
You should give it a go. It's one that works best if you don't know anything about it.
Yeah, and I didn't.
Huh, interesting.
But it was kind of like, hey, I'm a movie, and I'm not going to tell you stuff, so when I tell you stuff, you're going to be surprised, right?
Did you know that it was the same guy that did Martyrs?
Yes, that's the only thing I knew.
And I think that makes you expect a very particular movie.
I just wanted it to be good.
Well, I liked it more, I think, than you did. Erica, I'd be really curious what you think of it.
I thought it was really offensive.
I have a really irrational hatred of Jessica Biel.
Well, then don't watch it.
I thought she was okay in this one.
Her lack of acting was on display, though.
That's the thing is, she's not a good actress, I think.
They weren't doing her any favors. They were like, lady, you can't act. Here's some stuff way out of your range. And we're going to try to ugly it up on top of it. So
have fun with that.
Yeah, good luck, folks. It's not her fault. I get that she wants to do something, but I don't think she's got it in her, which is a shame. She should just be in Blade 3 over and over again.
Or just work on being Mrs. Timberlake.
Or just have sex with Justin Timberlake. That seriously.
But Blade 3, guys, right?
I love Blade 3.
Anybody?
I love it. With no shame. I adore Thank Blade God. 3.
Thank God Eric is here.
I had borrowed it from Erica for like 6 months and I never watched it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, she had all three of my Blade movies for ever.
Man, those Blade movies are great.
I adore them.
I then watched a terrible movie. You know, in this small list, I started about 8 things and never finished them. When you're in pain, it's really hard to concentrate. I watched a movie called ATM. Do you know about
this? It's been my instant cue forever. Is it no good?
Mine too. I've never
guys, gone to it, watch
though.
It.
I will.
It's fucking crazy. It's not good.
Right, putting it on top of my list.
But it's not as bad as you would expect.
Oh.
But it's not good.
Okay.
Josh from Josh and Drake is on it.
Oh, in it.
That's on it. Exciting. He's on it. No, but it's in what is her name? Alice Eve is in it. Alice Eve is the lady in the new Star Trek movie, the blonde.
I didn't see it.
Meh. Anyways, she's in it. It's a weird movie. It's terrible. You should watch it.
Totally.
And then last night, well, see, this is the conversation I always have. Oh, I really love the Mission Impossible franchise. Really? Yeah, I love the Mission Impossible franchise. It's so good. Even that second one? Yeah, the Mission Impossible franchise is so good. Apparently, I had never seen the second one until last night.
The second one is the one with Doug Ray Scott as the villain, right?
It's so bad.
The only one I've seen is the third one, which I liked, and I've seen bits of the second one.
Oh, the first one's great.
The first one's De Palma, right?
Yeah, man. The first one's great. Third one's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then when Abrams starts fucking with it's real good. But this, I don't know how I didn't see the second one. That's really bad.
Doug Ray Scott should only ever be in Ever After.
Man, he's not cast well. Plus, in fight scenes, he looks just like Tom Cruise.
What?
Their hair is fluffy in the same way.
Okay.
And they both kind of have heart-shaped faces in this. And like, it's a John Woo movie. Also, I didn't know I didn't like John Woo until very recently.
Wow. The more you know.
So come to find out, I'm not a fan of John Woo. So that is my very tiny list because I couldn't finish a movie.
Okay. I've got a few. I'll go through them. We talked about it last time because Christine, you had watched it. And NOTLP was reviewing it for Russian Roulette. So whenever they review a movie that I want to see, I usually try to watch it because I want to be able to listen to the discussion. And that was Haunter.
Oh, I'm glad you watched it.
Yeah, I think you had kind of mentioned this, it really did feel like a very PG-13 movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing is, like, you've got, it's a really cool setup, it's a cool concept, it's a ghost story kind of told from the ghost point of view, sort of Groundhog Day, sort of Sixth Sense-ish. But then you have, like, Stephen McHattie as, like, this really scary dude who kills young girls, in kind of the most, like, the nicest way you could kill a person. You know what I mean?
I'll remember you said that.
Well, like, seriously, because if you have this, like, vicious, vicious killer, but he kills people by putting them in a car and turning the carbon monoxide on, which, mm-hmm. from what I understand, is, like, if you gotta go, that's a good way to go. So there was something about it that was very, like, you felt like it was definitely holding back an edge.
Yeah.
But that being said, it was enjoyable. And that made me want to go back and watch Vincenzo Natali's first film, Cube.
Hmm.
I love
Cube. It's been a while for me.
It holds up.
Does it hold up?
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing is, you see the low-budgetness and you hear some of the low-budgetness a little more. I think just some of the dialogue, and not necessarily a little bit of the acting, but it feels more like just the story is ultimately more interesting than some of the language.
Uh-huh.
That being said, it's still such a cool movie. And Brandon had never seen it, so watching it with somebody who'd never seen it was really fun, and he enjoyed it, so that made me happy. I did a couple of things on Instant Watch. One, I decided I wanted to really cheer myself up, so I watched this movie called The Seasoning House.
What the fuck is that?
It's a really cheerful movie about set in the Balkans, I guess in like the late 90s when there was really bad things happening there. And this house where they kidnap girls and basically prostitute them to soldiers. It's not a cheerful movie by any means. This has been like making the round, like the festival rounds and stuff, and kind of enlisted as like one of the, like, best horror films of last year and, like, a really good, like, a very disturbing film.
Mm-hmm.
It was decent, like, because it is a hard film to watch, but at the same time, it's a film that is not exploitive, even though it's a very exploitive topic. I mean, there is rape and abuse, but it's not done in a way that ever makes it sexy. I don't think there's any actual nudity in a movie where that is set in a house where women are just being so forced into prostitution. And what's his name? The guy who's in, like, all Neil Marshall films. I think it's, like, Sean Pertwee or something. He was in Dog Soldiers and Doomsday.
Handsome-ish older guy?
Yes. Oh, but that Erica, you know him. He's Fingers. He's the Onion Knight.
Davos?
He's Davos. Davos Seaworth. Yes, thank you. On Game of Thrones, he's Davos Seaworth.
You got so excited.
I got really excited because I forgot he was in it.
I could literally hear you flailing.
I did flail. I flailed a lot. It was Game of Thrones talk. But he's in it. So it's like, it's a, whatchamacallit, it's a well-made film. I don't know who to recommend it to because it's pretty dark.
It sounds like I would like it, but I don't want to watch it, Emily.
I think you would like it. The lead is really good. The girl who is the lead, I mean, in real life, she's not, but in the movie, she is deaf and can't speak. And the actress just does a really great job in the part. It is a depressing film, but then it's a triumphant film. I don't know. I'm curious what you think of it. It's like, I hesitate to recommend it because it's like a really dark film that's very kind of realistically done. So it's all this stuff. But at the same time, it's well made and it's the kind of movie that could have been made really wrong.
Hmm.
So that's that.
I don't know. I don't know if I'm sold on being sad.
This one wasn't sad. Another instant watch was The Dinosaur Project.
What's that? Sometimes I feel like we have totally different...
Apparently we do.
Different one, instant it's watches.
It's like Jurassic Park meets found footage.
Okay.
Which I will say sounds much more awesome than the movie is, but the movie was decent for what it was. It managed to do more than you'd expect with a low budget, considering you're dealing with dinosaurs and not much money. Also, on Instant was a not very good, bloody disgusting release called The Haunting of Helena.
Okay.
That's another title that might, like, if you're like me and most of the movies on your Instant queue are just low budget horror movies, this one will flash forward. It's like a tooth fairy story, but it's not very good. Also, I watched a lot of instant watch horror movies. One with everybody's boyfriend, AJ Bowen.
Which one did you watch?
Rites of Spring.
Yeah, I liked that one a lot.
It was decent.
It was not what I expected.
No, and it was a really strange, because it's two stories. On one hand, you have like a very simple kidnapping story. On the other hand, you have a sort of human sacrifice, evil scarecrow story.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of tie together, but then it gets very haphazard. It was interesting because it tries to do something different with kind of the traditional, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's well made.
I agree.
Yeah, and it has a really good cast. So it was, you know, it was worth watching. It's a good, I think, kind of under the radar little horror film. To mix things up, because I'm actually, as we know, deep down a 75-year-old woman, I watched a movie called Out to Sea with Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau. This was a Brannon pick.
Does that make it better or worse?
I don't know. It's cute. This is like the kind of movie that if you're trying to figure out what to go see with your grandmother, this is the kind of movie that you could watch.
I'll take that into advisement.
Because it's about Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon. It's from like 1997 or so.
And I think I remember it coming out.
Diane Cannon's in it. Brent Spiner is in it, and he fucking steals the whole entire movie. No, he doesn't. I take that back. Because you know who else is in the movie? Elaine fucking Stritch.
What a bizarre movie.
It is. I enjoyed it. It's cute. It's very harmless. So, again, it's, you know, whereas a seasoning house, you shouldn't show your grandmother. Out to Sea, you can show your grandmother. And just three more on my list. I'll go through quickly. A movie Christine recommended last week, or whenever we recorded last, like a year ago. Violet and Daisy.
What'd you think?
I really liked it.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it quite a bit. And it's funny because this, Erica, I think you would also really like this one.
Okay.
This was Christine's instant watch pick from the last time we recorded. It's Saoirse Ronan and Alexis Bledel and James Gandolfini. It's very stylized. The dialogue is very stylized. The first 5 minutes, I wasn't sure if I could do it. But then,
oh, like, really?
Yeah, I was kind of like, ooh, I don't know. This is a little.
Oh, I'm glad you stuck with it.
A little hip, but then it totally works, and it's really cool. The visuals are neat. The language is great. It's written by the guy who wrote Precious.
Oh.
But she's just interesting, and apparently this movie like did very poorly, and nobody liked it. But I really liked it. So, okay, very last two. I don't know why I needed to watch something on my commute, and it was going to be something that I wasn't going to write about. So I was like, "Oh, what's on here? Oh, look, a Hallmark adaptation of a young adult novel everybody reads in seventh grade, starring Tommy Lee Jones and a very young Chad Lowe. April Morning.
The fuck is that?"
Derek,
did you have to read this?
No.
I've never heard of that.
Me neither.
It was based on a young adult novel about, like, a boy coming of age during the American Revolution. No?
No.
Okay, it's just, that's what it is. It's a coming of age tale during the American Revolution. The film version also has Robert Urich and Meredith Salinger from The Journey of Nettie Gann. And Rip Torn being British-ish, kind of. For a Hallmark movie, for a Hallmark TV movie made in the late 90s or early 90s, I guess, it's decent. If you're in the mood for a young adult.
I was going to say, when will I be in the mood for that?
Everybody has their moments. And then the last thing, because when you're not in a mood for a coming of age tale set during the American Revolution, maybe you're in the mood for a 1951 exploitation film based on the lives of Daisy and Violet Hilton, the Siamese twins. This was a movie called Chained for Life, and it stars Daisy and Violet Hilton, the famous Siamese twins. It's an hour long. Apparently it is public domain. It's very hard to hear because it's a very poor recording of it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
That's always my biggest reservation.
Yeah. It is a shame because it's like, it was, I mean, it's weird because it's the movie was 51, but it feels like it was made so much earlier because the quality is just terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very hard to understand anything.
Excuse me.
But that being said, you know, there's a guy who plays the accordion really quickly, and that was kind of cool. So yeah, typical week for me, I guess, is what that comes down to. That being said, ladies, are we ready to talk some movies?
Yeah. We're going to go with the happy one first right now.
We are going to go with the feel-good movie of 1997, 98?
98.
I think it's 98, right? Yeah, it's 98. All right. The lighthearted movie starring everybody's favorite comedian, Tom Hanks. Also starring comedic actors such as Giovanni Ribisi.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be Saving Private Ryan. So let's take a quick break. Let's come back and let's save Private Ryan.
War is a science which a general must use, with stratagems and strategies, statistical analyses, to know how many soldiers he's prepared to lose. Now, gentlemen, this is the plan for tomorrow's skirmish. The army of the enemy is stationed on the hill, so we've got to draw them down here where they're easier to kill. So you in the ravine, that's the area in green, will move across the plain where you plainly can be seen. Then the enemy in blue will undoubtedly pursue, and we'll hope to keep your losses to comparatively few. And gentlemen, and then the men go marching out into the fray, conquering the...
We have returned to discuss 1998's Academy Award winning, although infamously not a Best Picture winning, Saving Private Ryan. Now, ladies, had you both seen this before?
Yes.
I had.
Did you see it in the theaters? Did you see it? What was your first experience seeing it?
I think I saw it on, like, an HBO-style channel.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you, like, voluntarily sit down to what you were like, oh, this movie, I should sit down and watch it? Because it's long, so it's like...
Well, here's the thing about this movie. I know I've seen bits and pieces of it a lot, because there are bits and pieces of it that are very fresh in my mind. I have seen it in its entirety before as well, but I think it was just one of those things that every time it was on, I'd kind of just get like sucked into it.
Gotcha. And Erica, you saw it in the theater?
I did. I saw it in the theater, and I honestly don't think I've seen the, I've sat down and watched the entire thing since then. Okay. For some reason, wait, let me see if this story, I have it like a story in my head about when I went to go see it, and I'm not 100% sure if it's true or not.
Check that shit.
Yeah, I am.
We don't do lies on the Feminine Critique.
Yep.
No, I lie a lot.
I mean, I know what we used to do on Gleecast, but still, it's different.
My story is absolutely true. I just fact-checked it. For some reason, my mother and I went to the movies to see Saving Private Ryan while my dad took my brother to see Small Soldiers.
I don't know. You might have bet on the wrong horse there.
Yeah, I have like a weird love for Small Soldiers.
Small
because
Soldiers is an amazing
you were always
movie.
Jealous that you had to go see Saving Private Ryan. And
yes, I think so. My brother really liked it growing, like Small Soldiers growing up. So I've seen it many times and I kind of love it. Yeah, and I don't know why that stuck with me that I had to
no,
go see Saving Private Ryan.
I totally understand why that's. Like, I remember when I was a kid, the only time like I remember that big split was going to see with my mother and sister. We went to see Oliver and Company while my dad and my brother saw Rain Man. But like that cool. makes sense in a way.
Yeah.
The other one doesn't as much, Erica, I have to
Why
say.
Did me and my mom go watch the war movie? Like, I don't understand. Why was
your dad and your brother went to watch the Little War movie?
I mean, it was 1998. My brother was 7, so clearly he couldn't yeah. go see Saving Private Ryan. But, like, why didn't me and my dad go? Like, and my mom take my brother to see? I don't know. Probably
Maybe
because
your mom
comics.
Was like, look, I'm not into Small Soldiers.
I like my men big.
I want regular soldiers.
I want regular-sized soldiers. That's funny. No, it was probably because...
Your body is as short as I go, woman.
It's probably because of Tom Hanks. My mom loves Tom Hanks. But
well, there you go.
I don't know. It was just such a weird memory for me. But yeah, that's the only time I think I sat down and watched the whole thing. I definitely remember like seeing it and like when the movie started, like the very beginning, I was like, "Oh, blah blah blah." Like it's not really a spoiler, but you know, it's that thing the first time you watch it, you don't know who the character is at the beginning. Yes, yes. So like when I watched it, I was like, "Oh, right, that's blah blah blah." Like I remembered who it was supposed to be. Yeah. Gotcha. So yeah.
Right. I had never seen this movie.
Oh, that's surprising to me.
Yeah, very surprising to me.
Yeah. I just missed it in the theaters. You know, I was 16. I had other things to do. Like
yeah, we were doing cool shit.
Like go see Shakespeare in Love and Life is Beautiful, and I guess every other movie nominated that year. And I, with no reason, and then it just became one of these movies I always wanted to sit down and watch, but then thought
I can't wait to hear your point of view as someone who had no youthful memories about it.
Oh, youthful memory. I mean,
because I think I'm gonna get some shit for my opinions on it. So,
well, all right. So let's just jump in then. With that in mind, does anybody want to give a summary, or should we just kind of?
I mean, it's pretty literal. Lady has 4 sons in the war. 3 of them die, so they're like, nah, not this last one. And they send Tom Hanks and his ragtag group of soldiers to go get that last one, and that happens to be Private James Ryan.
That would be Private James Ryan. We've got this very, I guess, typical 3-act structure, which makes sense because it's 3 hours.
3 hours.
we have the opening being the storming of Normandy.
Yes.
Which, I guess, let's talk about that first because it is... Probably
super
is,
famous.
Yeah, what is this film is most known for is, I think, yeah. It's like 27 minutes of really, really intense war. Now, you both having seen this fairly early in its run, I guess, was that like anything else you'd ever seen?
No.
No, not that I can recall.
It left an imprint, man. Yeah. That's yeah. some, it's, that is still amazing. Yep. I still think it looks amazing. Mm-hmm. It's, the cinematography is great. It's just put together so well and it's very effective.
Yeah. The,
it's flat out upsetting. Like you're tense the entire time.
Well, this is something with this movie I was trying to really figure out is, now I'm not overly versed in war movies. It's just not a genre that I have seen much of. But I do feel like this is probably is a turning point, but then that's kind of a separate question mark of a war. The old, I think it's a, is it Truffaut, I think, who had the very famous quote of, it's impossible to make an anti-war film that is a war film, because anytime you show war on screen, you're making it look thrilling and exciting and heroic, and therefore it ends up making war seem like this, no matter what you do, it ends up making a patriotic film versus a, I'm trying to show the devastation of this.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, that's true, certainly to an extent, because I think, yes, when you put soldiers and guns and men dying, it's, there is something exciting about it, and that is, you know, why there's a lot of, I guess, pride within a lot of war films. But when you do the reverse, which this film does, and I think since this film, I think other films have done it. I would definitely say Flags of Our Fathers and the other one, Letters from Iwo Jima, did it, where, yes, no, this does not make anybody want to go to, or at least the first 27 minutes, I should say, do not make anybody want to go to war, I would argue.
I agree with that. I don't think any of it makes anyone want to go to war. It's all pretty terrible. I mean, except for the fact that this one kid got a reprieve from being there. Like, that's the only character who has something good going for him. Like, everyone else kind of gets shit on.
Yeah.
In order to save him. Which is kind of the whole point of the movie.
Right. And it seems like there is, there's a lot of sentiment on both sides of, because Spielberg, I think based on the one extra that I watched that's on the DVD, Spielberg, I think, began the project as, I want to make a World War II movie. And then the more, it's actually really cute on the special extra, his dad talks, so you get to see Mr. Spielberg, and it's cute. But, like, it kind of seems like Spielberg started this as, I'm going to make my war movie. And then the more he kind of researched it, realized, oh, I'm going to make a very different kind of war movie. Based then on, I don't know if any of you were following in the Facebook group some of the threads that we had going, there's some people out there, including Oliver Stone, who still consider this to be a pro-war movie, a very patriotic movie.
I think it is.
Okay, Christine, tell us why.
I didn't like this movie.
Tell us why you didn't like it.
I didn't like it. I don't have anything
that's
articulate
not
to
a
say.
Reason why.
I don't want to speak out of my ass, because I really don't know a lot.
And it doesn't make for good podcasting.
The microphone's just too far away.
I can't move. My back hurts, guys. I thought this movie had a very sugary sweet stance on things, and I didn't like it.
From the beginning or by the end? Do you think it changes?
I think it does change, and yeah, that's my opinion. Somewhere midpoint, smack dab in the middle, I think it does kind of switch tone, switch attitude, switch. Like, it's not, it's like, I'm going to present you with these dark images, these unhappy, unsatisfying things, but somehow not want to make you feel too bad about them. How do you do that? You can't do that. I have to feel awful. But this movie didn't leave me feeling awful. This movie made me angry because I didn't feel like it was very good to its characters. It didn't do any of its characters any justice, but that's neither here nor there. And I also really want to see the movie about poor Private Ryan having to fucking live his life under the pall of
by the way,
make it worth it, buddy. What? How do you do that?
It is a mighty high thing.
Jeez, buddy. Ah, Tom Hanks, what were you thinking? That poor guy is his poor wife. All I could think the whole time was that man's poor wife.
Every what day, Matt Damon wakes up, turns to his wife. Did I earn it? Do you think I earned it today?
Oh, my. Oh, me, oh, my. But that opening was really good. It was. It's really upsetting. But this is what I mean. There are characters in that opening that are literally on screen for 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And when they get shot in the head, you're like, Jesus.
Yeah.
Like, you get so upset. But then by the time you hit the end, there are people you've been with now for 3 hours. And you're like, all right, later.
It, it, I, I might fall between you two, because I agree. I think for me it is very specifically, it's that third act. It is after, and I mean this is a movie that, like, I think is kind of spoiler proof because you kind of know what's happening. So we're not gonna, you know, necessarily go into all the gory details, but the third act when we find Private Ryan, and then we kind of get one last stand, and it becomes this very, whereas the first opening is just this brutal, awful, you don't know exactly what's going on, you just know that men are dying in the worst ways, their body parts are being, you know, separated from them, to all of this other kind of more intimate stuff that's happening in the middle, where by the time, in that middle section, I felt when characters died, it was really effective. Mm-hmm. Because now I know these guys, and now, even though it was never quite as brutal as that opening scene, when, you know, characters at one point are running, and you hear a gunshot, and you know somebody goes down, and you don't know who, and then you get to that person, and you see which character it is, it's really upsetting, even though you've seen, at this point, 60 men die right in front of you. But then once we get to that third act, I kind of agree. You kind of lose the characters. I was taking notes. I looked away. I looked up and realized, oh, I think somebody else died.
Yeah.
A major character. And we're not getting back to that guy. So I guess he's dead. And it does end up on a very patriotic note. It ends with, you get to a sense of, point where the Germans are very simple enemies and very easy enemies.
I agree with that sentiment completely, and I don't think I could have said it as well as you just did.
Well, I am quite eloquent.
Well, that's the thing. This movie made me uncomfortable in a weird way, and I don't feel like I can articulate it well enough, and I don't want to sound ignorant and uninformed.
I will say there was another moment where it really started to lose me. And this was, and we talked about Spielberg and we talked about Closing Heroes of the Third Kind. I love Spielberg. I think he's somehow underrated despite being the most successful, famous director out there. Because I think a lot of cinema snobs like to think of him as very mainstream and not a very daring filmmaker. And you watch the first 27 minutes of this film and it's a very daring movie. And it's something that nobody else, I think, could really do at that time. But when Tom Hanks, about, I don't know, an hour and a half into the movie, gives a speech about, you know, who he really is and what he does for a living, and the music kind of gets louder and swells, and it just becomes this pure Oscar bait moment,
mm-hmm.
where it was like, ugh, you've started to lose me. And it just took something away from the kind of just immediacy of this story, and all of a sudden now I feel like I am in a big budget, Oscar ready Steven Spielberg film.
I agree.
Erica, what are you thinking?
I don't know, I'm just listening to you guys.
We do have quite pretty voices.
Sometimes when I'm on the show, I forget I'm on the show and I think I'm just listening to the podcast.
I want you to yell something out at some point. Like, what?
I definitely do that quite often, but apparently not when I'm actually on the show. No, I don't know. I feel like I was kind of the catalyst for covering this, because in our conversation, we were kind of like, well, what are we going to pair with Too Fast, Too Furious? And Emily mentioned how, well, Vin Diesel's not in that one, so should we cover one of his movies? And I was like, you know, Christine mentioned she doesn't like Vin Diesel. And I said, well, why don't we do something more serious, like Saving Private Ryan? And I don't think anyone even knew he was in this except for me, because I'm actually a Vin Diesel fan.
I like him in this.
Can I just say that I got genuinely upset when he died in this?
Thank you! Yeah. I was so mad because I was like, shit, I forgot he's only in like an hour.
There's like 7 hours left of this. Is he coming back?
He's a good character.
He was so cute and charming. Why isn't he that cute and charming all the time?
He is. You just don't see it yet. You will.
By the end of this, you will.
By the end of our Glee Cast and Furious episodes, you will love me like I do.
I believe you.
You will search out XXX and watch it. So, yeah. So I realized after watching this how horribly unqualified I am to actually discuss a war movie, because it's probably the smallest bit of film knowledge that I actually have. Like, I have close to no war film experience because...
Yeah, me neither, though.
I genuinely don't like them. And, like, that's an issue when I'm watching one. And, like, I appreciate this movie for what it is, for being a Spielberg film, and I like the performances. I like the characters. I mean, not all of them, because, you know, what's his face? Like, Ed Burns was a shitty character. Like, he was just a shitty person, so... But you're not supposed to like him, so... But, like, I enjoyed the performances, and I felt pretty much, like, genuinely upset when characters that I, like, died, angry at the characters I was supposed to feel angry at. Speaking of the final act, I was that whole part. But I don't know. I don't, like, I feel like I don't have the basis of film knowledge to genuinely critique the movie as a war movie, because I don't have that.
Well, it's... I think what's interesting is Christine, you also probably, are you also agreeing of not being a war film enthusiast?
Oh, yeah, not at all.
Because I think of, like, for me, when I think of war films, the ones I watch tend to be the ones that are, like, the sort of alternative war movies, like Come and See, or, like, even Apocalypse Now, you can put
that
out, of where they're... movies about war, but they're not what you think of when you think of kind of Hollywood war movies. Because I think that was a genre that was bigger before our time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And for reasons, for different, you know, the country goes through different swells of what they want to see in a war movie. And then, you know, in the 70s, which is probably more of our wheelhouse, you know, your war movies were Coming Home and The Deer Hunter, which were very different from, you know, 10 years before when you're looking at John Wayne movies and so on. And so this, I think, really is when you do kind of look at what's come after it. I do think this was good in some ways of kind of highlighting the actual horror of war. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that opening scene has become so, like, if you've seen Battle Royale 2, it is very much inspired by Saving Private Ryan, for one thing. as are many other, I think, movies. But at the same time, like, this movie still has... It is, I think, still kind of trapped by some of the makings of... you know, we still have to be really respectful to the veterans. We still have to ultimately tell a story about America being the good guy in the end. And a lot of those things, I think, do ultimately work against it.
Thank you, because I don't think I could have said that as well as you just did.
So do we want to talk about all of the famous faces that pop up in this movie and how
distracting it is
when you watch it?
Mm-hmm.
It is, well, my two big ones had to be, first of all, Nathan Fillion.
Right.
The fake Private Ryan.
Yep.
No clue that was going to happen.
Nope.
I was like, is that little baby? Oh my God, it is little baby. He's so funny. He's so cute. And then I had to watch this in two sittings because it's a little long. And in between, I was having a conversation about, like, oh, these are the characters I like. You know, I remember this character. I like that one. And I was like, and then the little Weasley guy they just picked up to do the languages. I stopped mid-sentence and screamed Daniel Faraday at the top of my lungs. I didn't realize it was him until... I was like a day removed from watching it.
For non-Lost fans, that's Jeremy Davis. Davies.
I love him. I knew it was him, but it just wasn't clicking for some reason. Oh, it was.
What about one-armed Bryan Cranston?
Oh, yeah, that was really nice to see as well. I love him. He's so talented.
Leland Orser, because, of course, if you have a movie with character actors, you're going to include Leland Orser.
Who's that? Do I need to see his face?
No, and Seven, he was, Lust.
Mm-hmm.
In The Bone Collector, he was The Bone Collector.
Well, if you put it that way.
Okay, in the episode of Law & Order SVU.
I'm looking for him.
It's the episode where he was married to Karen Allen and he's schizophrenic.
Well, I do like Karen Allen. I don't know who that is. His name's Leland?
Leland.
Why can't I find them?
This L-E-L-A-N-D.
All right, trust me, you've seen
everything, at least 2 episodes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that guy.
He's way down at the bottom.
Of this movie?
Yeah, of the IMDb.
Because I think they kind of list them in order of appearance. So.
Yeah, probably.
You have Paul Giamatti, I love Paul Giamatti, but I had the same problem in 12 Years a Slave, where he came on screen and I didn't recognize him, but as soon as he started talking, I'm like, that's Paul Giamatti. Like, his voice is too distinct. He sounds too much like Paul Giamatti.
I liked him in this, though. He sometimes does things and I get irritated real fast.
Right.
But he hung on in there.
Ted Danson.
Yeah.
Now, I can't watch a war movie where Ted Danson walks in and he's Ted Danson. That took me out a little bit. And there was somebody else that kind of made me be like, who was it? I don't know who the other one was.
It wasn't Dennis Farina.
Oh, well, that would be another one.
I love Dennis Farina, man. It was nice to see him.
Up in here. Yeah, so this is definitely a good movie reference for any kind of Kevin Bacon game or,
Oh, yeah, and remember when Tom Sizemore was awesome?
Yeah, and do you know who originally they thought of for his part?
I don't know.
Oh, yes, you do. If you can't cast Tom Sizemore, who would you cast?
I don't know why. Yeah. I don't know why I got so defensive.
Who's, essentially the... Okay, Christine is to Erica what Michael Madsen is to Tom Sizemore.
Oh.
They're like the same exact person.
I forgot. That's... You're right. I saw Michael Madsen in real life once. He looked like a wallet.
I like that I don't need any more explanation. I get it. I get it.
It paints a picture.
Yeah. The writer of this was Robert Rodat, who also did the most depressing war movie of all time, The Patriot. Where everybody dies.
I have seen The Patriot.
Everybody dies. Oh, you've got a young son? Let's kill him. Oh, you've got a girlfriend? Let's kill her. Oh, you have another son? Let's kill him too.
Ugh. Spoilers, Emily.
No, trust me.
No, I'm never going to watch it.
You don't actually watch it. Watch April Morning instead, folks. It's on Instant Watch. And it's great for young adults. Robert Rodat also wrote Thor: The Dark World.
Yes, he did.
But most importantly, guys, the most important credit in this movie... Christine, you mentioned, I think, right from the beginning that the cinematography is A1.
It is.
Cinematographer, whose name I didn't write down, but it's something hard to pronounce, I believe.
Okay.
He's worked with Spielberg on such films as Lincoln and Munich and Schindler's List.
Mm-hmm.
Also did a beautifully shot film, The Diving Bell and the Butterfly. But most importantly, this man clearly learned everything he needed to know about filmmaking from his first feature film credit... A little movie that includes the best date montage of all time, Cool as Ice.
You know what? That movie does have some interesting shots in it.
When you think about it. The montage.
Not gonna lie.
Have you seen
that montage is pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, sorry, Private Ryan. I know that, you're an Oscar winner and stuff. But
clearly.
You got nothing on the 12-minute first date montage that starts at a restaurant, goes to a beach... Oh, goes to, a water park? Seriously, folks. Check it out if you have nothing before. Cool guys. Yeah.
Changing lives. That movie.
It changed this DOP's life, I'll tell you that much. I apologize, I didn't write his name down. Like I said, it's something like Yannick Slavkovich or something. I can't pronounce it.
Oh, it is definitely something like that. It's like Janusz Kaminski is the last name.
Yeah. Now
but the first
it
name.
So easy.
It's like J-A-N-U-S-Z. Janusz.
It's like the guy
Kaminski.
Who directed Supergirl. What was his name? It was like Paul.
Who knows?
Exactly. But yeah, so. What else do we have to say about Private Ryan? We also didn't mention Matt Damon, but Matt Damon is in this movie.
I feel like everyone. Knows
the
Matt Damon
titular character.
Something interesting about that was Spielberg cast him before Good Will Hunting was released, I think. And he wanted Private Ryan to be an unknown. He wanted kind of a baby-faced, young actor who was not a recognizable name. So he was like, oh, yeah, he was in Courage Under Fire. Great movie. Yeah, good guy. Okay, yeah. And I think he might have seen Good Will Hunting, but it hadn't come out yet. So when it came out, it kind of ruined some of those plans. But yeah, the kind of, it's not stunt casting, but watching it almost 14 years later, so much of it just does feel like a who's who in the 90s of actors in Hollywood. And it's not the movie's fault, but it, you know, it takes something away, I think. And a young, sexy Barry Pepper as the
really
Christian sniper.
He really likes to say stuff before he shoots things.
He does, and he shoots things pretty good.
That's how I would have described him, like, if I was pitching this movie. All right, we got a sniper. He loves to say things before he shoots stuff.
And then we got this Irish guy. He's kind of a dick. And then we got this skinny guy who's really good at physics and also speaks German.
Oh, I wish it was just Lost that I spent 3 hours watching.
I wonder if he's the only actor in this show that was on Lost. That's crazy to think.
I didn't notice anybody else, but I could be wrong.
You know what this movie needed, now that we're talking about Lost? This movie needed motherfucking
Clancy Brown. Brown.
Clancy Brown! You said it, I said it. You can't imagine, folks. Seriously.
I really want to watch Lost. back on track. I'm really
an actor who appeared in 2 episodes of a 100-plus episode show, Clancy.
Because he would have been perfect in it.
Clancy Brown would have been perfect in everything.
Oh, he's so handsome.
Everything. He elevates every material. Pet Sematary 2, folks. Shitty movie. Oh, no, it's not. It's a great movie because Clancy Brown brings it.
Jeez. So I'm really glad I rewatched Saving Private Ryan.
Because it gave us an excuse to talk about Cool as Ice and Clancy Brown.
I mean, I'm glad that I saw it, because I think if somebody was like, so what do you think of Saving Private Ryan? I would have been like, I remember some of the stuff from it. It was pretty good, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think I will say this is, it is not, there is great filmmaking in this movie. The opening is great filmmaking. A lot else of what goes on, I think, is great. But I think it's more the script and where the sentiment ends up going that chips away quite a bit at this movie. So I think this does hold up as, I think this is a great movie, but I have a lot of problems with it.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a question, ladies. Should it have won Best Picture?
What was it up against that year?
Well, the movie that it lost to was Shakespeare in Love. The other movies would have been Life is Beautiful, Elizabeth, and something else.
I do not feel qualified to answer, as I haven't seen any of the other movies. I think I saw Shakespeare in Love, but it was a very long time ago. I have zero recollection of it.
I'd be curious.
I don't like the movies that they usually pick.
Yeah.
So this was a good choice.
Yeah, and I mean, it's Oscars are what they are, so it's just one of those things. But
I mean, it was a good movie, my gosh. Yeah, but it's just, I think this is the perfect case of, hey, you know how like a movie just sometimes isn't for you?
Yep.
This movie was, I'm the last person I think this movie was for.
Well, I think it's clear that it wasn't made for any of us. Like,
I mean, I think this movie was primarily Spielberg's way of making a movie for the World War II generation, and to kind of like leave something for people who didn't experience that and who didn't grow up with, because it's, I mean, it's something that, I mean, because even like my parents are baby boomers, they were born after the war. The sense of how, like, I mean, obviously in our lives, we've now lived through 2 American wars. But it is such a different experience for us than it was for that generation. Just like it was a very different experience, the Vietnam War was a very different experience for our parents' generation. Where it is, I appreciate watching this movie because I do feel like it gives me a little more of a generation that ultimately did define where our country is at this point. But that, yeah, it is so hard to really grasp onto that because it's so far before our time, even though in a way it's not. It's, you know, what, 70 years ago? I'm losing my articulation here. But I guess what I don't know if I'm making my point or not. It's not a movie for us. But I can see what Spielberg tried to do in making a movie that he really wanted to say this was this war to America.
And I mean, we kind of already said this, but I just feel like it hasn't aged well at all. Because it was, aside from the fact that it's war, I just felt like I had so much trouble, like, wrapping my head around it, that, like, this is how wars were fought, like, mm-hmm. and connecting to it, especially because it was so all-star casting. And, like, at the time, these people weren't really famous yet.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But to me now, I'm like, well, like, it's hard for me to relate to the fact that these people had to, like, I'm going to sound like such a arrogant asshole and like spoiled, but it's hard for me to understand, like, they had to use maps and they couldn't call each other. Like, they couldn't find him because there was no way for them to get in touch with each other. Like, it's just like a hard thing for me to comprehend because I've grown up in this generation where I'm always accessible to people and the people I need to talk to are always accessible to me. So it was just really hard to connect with, and it might have been easier if, like, I didn't, like, I haven't, if I hadn't seen Tom Hanks use a cell phone previously. Like, I feel like it might have sat differently in my head.
There's that the cast feels too contemporary.
Yeah.
Right.
Because these are all people that I know and I watch, like, mm-hmm. on a regular basis.
Yeah, it's Giovanni Ribisi. He's a Scientologist. Exactly. He was on, you know.
I'm like, he's Phoebe's brother. Like.
Yeah, it is, I think, something that really does make this feel like dress up as opposed to a really visceral war movie, which is also why I think the opening scene works so well, because you don't have time to recognize anybody
right.
other than Tom Hanks.
Yeah. And you know, he's not going to die right away.
Right. So. And I mean, Tom Hanks is one of those actors that is impossible. It's pretty much impossible to not see Tom Hanks when you see a Tom Hanks movie. He is such an iconic, star versus an actor, and I think he's a very good actor, but because of, you think of the scope of the films he's done, I dare you to watch a movie and forget that you're watching Tom Hanks. It's very difficult to do. And I do think that hurts this movie, whether or not it's this movie's fault or not, and whether or not it's even Tom Hanks' fault or not. You know, we had this conversation when we talked about Nicole Kidman and how, you know, she can be miscast so easily, and it's sometimes very hard to look past the fact that you're watching Nicole Kidman, but then you can sometimes, because she is a really good
actress. Sometimes I can.
Yeah.
I really usually don't with Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
Even in the old stuff now, like when I rewatch The Burbs or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like the old school of acting, too. Like, it's the way Jimmy Stewart was. You always knew you were watching Jimmy Stewart, and that was fine.
That's true.
And they're
like a Cary Grant movie is that's Cary Grant.
And
look at him.
It's not that it's makes him not as good an actor, because there's a lot of actors that can't do that. And when you see Jimmy Stewart do it in different movies, you see how good he is. It's just a different kind of style of acting and just being famous, I guess, in a way, is what I'm saying. Kinda. All right. So do we have any more? Or are we ready to rate this movie?
Sure, I can rate it.
Okay. Christine, you sound excited. Do you want to go first?
Which one do we do first?
Quality of film.
Film? 6.5.
Okay.
Maybe 7. Mm-hmm. I don't know. If pressed, I could go 7.
If Michael Madsen came over and, or rather, if Tom Sizemore came over. And,
I was going to say, could they not get Tom Sizemore to come over and defend himself?
No, he was a little busy visiting Heidi Fleiss. So he had to send over his proxy, Michael Madsen. I'm going to go higher. I have issues with the sentiment of the film. at a certain point, but I think for 90 minutes, I think there's some outstanding filmmaking going on. So I'm going to go an 8 for quality of film.
Yeah, I agree with Emily. I would go 8.
Okay, now quality of life improved upon by watching this film.
6.
I'm going to... I mean, I feel, again, like this movie has influences and with a different successful... if Spielberg had gone a different route, and this movie, which, by the way, this was the highest grossing film of 1998, which is just interesting to me. I think if made differently, that could have launched a different direction of movies that might not have been so good. So I'm going to go 7.5 for me on sitting down and watching it. I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I could say I did it. It's given me a lot to think about. Eric.
I'm going to go 7.
Now, for comparison, where would you give a quality of life for Small Soldiers?
like a 10, like right?
8.25, okay, yes. Just,
you know, I feel like that's important so we can really understand what that number means to Erica.
Exactly.
Okay, so that was our thoughts on Saving Private Ryan.
I'm going to go 7 for the quality of film, like a straight 7, because that opening sequence really did change a lot of shit, like cinematically. So I have to be serious. That's me being serious. I'm done now.
Oh, man. Throw down the mic. Let's go.
I don't have one. Wait. I'm hitting it. You can't hear it.
No, we heard that. I don't know if it recorded, but it sounded good.
Okay.
All right. So we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. So ladies, if you will, put on your... I don't know what they wear in Fast and the Furious. I'm trying to say get ready for it. Like, you should be wearing, like... belly shirts and your shirts tied around your waist. And
no, put on your neon-colored clothing that matches your car.
You could do that. I, however, being as white as I am, I'm going to put on some Converse, white socks, long shorts, and a t-shirt. And we'll be back to talk about Too Fast.
Gonna tell you when it's too late. Who's gonna tell you things aren't so great? You can't go on thinking nothing. Who's gonna drive you home tonight?
We've returned in our neon colored cars. What color, Erica? What color is your car?
Oh, it's neon purple.
Ooh, purple. Christine, what's yours?
Pink.
Okay, I'm going green. I got
my God, I have a vagina, don't I?
Well, yeah. Last time I mean, what? All right, Too Fast, Too Furious. Now, before we get to this, we should give a very brief summary of how we felt about the first one. So, Christine, you thought it was okay?
Yeah, I liked it a lot more than I thought. Okay. It was way more dated than I expected, which was awesome. I didn't realize it was the progenitor of so many tropes. It, like, is a genre unto itself now. It's pretty awesome. It was ridiculous, and I loved it.
See, my problem with it was I don't feel like it was ridiculous. I feel like, I find the first
I film... just gave you the dirtiest look you couldn't see.
Doesn't translate well to podcasting.
You didn't think it was ridiculous?
Not enough. Like, it just felt...
What did you want?
I find the first film... There are things I like about it. I like the women in it.
Yes.
I actually like Vin Diesel in the first one. I guess I like what a shitty cop he is. But I just don't I don't understand what they're trying to, why they're trying to do a really complicated heist when there's easier ways to do it.
Because it's just what they do. They drive. That's how they do it.
You have to understand certain things about these people or you will never be on board.
I just find the first film very poorly paced. I didn't understand what the hubbub was. I don't find it as fun as Spring Break. And the film spawned this series where, like, people just went apeshit for everything.
That's not true. This franchise has a storied past.
Yes, and that's what why I am willing to sit down and go through each film as. Mm-hmm,
Did you guys get into the fact that that big race in the first one was called the Race Wars? and how misleading that is. Like, that seems real misleading.
Okay, this kind of brings up my first issue with the movie. So it opens, like, there's a big race, and, like, there's all these people, they're all excited to watch it, but nobody actually can see anything that happens in the race. They see when the cars leave, and then, like, 5 minutes later, cars come back. But, like, all the crazy shit that we see, nobody else sees that.
Mm-hmm. Plus, they don't have slow-mo, so they lose a lot.
Right, and no, like, kick-ass soundtrack. Like, it's
just, I agree. No. I agree with you. Who's watching these? They don't seem very exciting.
Right. Like, and that just bugs me as a spectator.
Yeah.
You know, it's why I don't always like going to games of things, because usually you can see it better on TV.
Yeah, like wrestling.
Yeah, oh, totally.
Not that I've been to multiple wrestling
events. Nothing wrong if you have, girl. I have.
Well, I have. I have, okay?
High five.
But, the first one is not perfect, obviously.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it.
Now, Erica, you like the first one much more than I do.
Oh, yeah. But I don't love it as much as I love later to come ones.
Okay.
It's kind of like, let's see. Well, this is where this whole thing started, is that it's kind of like the first Step Up movie where.
How many times during these movies did you just pause it and scream, I wish I was watching the Step Up movies? I did constantly.
I ruined this DVD doing that.
It was really obnoxious. I can't even imagine what it was like to watch this with me. Oh, did you just wish you were watching Step Up 2 right now? Because I do.
But yeah, I feel like it's necessary, and I enjoy it for what it is because, again, I love Vin Diesel, and I enjoy Paul Walker, RIP. I miss him dearly. But yeah, it's not great, but it's not horrible. It's not as bad as the first Step Up movie. I'll say that because that movie's pretty god awful.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But I appreciate it for what it is, and that it's spawned this great thing that I really, really enjoy and love, and feel a little sad that I don't actually own yet, but they're all $15 on Blu-ray at Target right now, so I might very soon.
Okay. Now, let's get into Too Fast, Too Furious. Before we get into anything about it, can I talk about how stressful this DVD is? Because the menu makes you pick a car? What does that even mean? Like, if I picked a different car, would I have watched a different movie? Was there a director's cut? I don't know.
I doubt it. I didn't watch the DVD, though.
Christine, did you have trouble with this, or did you also not watch a DVD? No technical difficulties whatsoever, folks.
None.
No attention to the great editing that I'm not doing. We were talking about how this DVD really stressed me out.
Okay.
Christine.
Because of the intense action?
Did you watch the actual... did you have a physical DVD that you had to put into a DVD player or a computer?
You know what? In this crazy age we live in where things just enter internet into your house, and sometimes you pay for them and sometimes you don't.
Okay, guys, this DVD, you put it in, like it comes in a box or a sleeve, you open it, you take it out, you put it in your machine, you close the door. And instead of just being like press play or instead of being like director's cut, alternate cut, it's like pick your car. And there's four different cars, and you have to pick them, and they don't have any words.
Ooh, whose cars are they?
I don't remember. I was too, like, frazzled trying to figure out. Like, I don't know if one's an unrated cut, or one's the R cut, or one's a director's cut, or anything. You don't know. You just pick a car and hope for the best.
Did it work out okay?
I don't know. We'll find out as we talk about Too Fast, Too Furious. So that freaked me out. So you guys didn't get the short video the prequel video connecting the two films, did you then?
No.
Wait, with Vinny on the beach or whatever?
There's like a little short video called, I think it's like Brian on the Run.
Ugh.
It's Paul Walker, like right.
My now. Least favorite character, let me just say that.
Again, yes, very sorry for his untimely passing, but can we say we clank? I don't know. So you have, there's like a maybe 5 minute little short video montage of him running from the police. And essentially the cops take out like every resource available to track him. So there's a moment where like it's Paul Walker, like his face is like on the front page of every newspaper because they're looking for this cop who left his job. Now, let's just get into
world news, folks.
Here's the thing though. In this movie, why are cops looking for Paul Walker?
I don't know.
Because he let a felon go.
But what are they actually looking for him to do?
He committed a crime.
No. But what do they, once they find him, what do they then do to him? Do they put him in jail?
Oh, are we going into the film?
Yes,
the synopsis?
Because I think this actually is an issue.
This isn't a hypothetical.
I'm like, wait, are we, I thought you were still talking about the short. I got confused.
Well, because, okay, in the short, front page of the paper, giant picture of Paul Walker saying, you know, dirty cop on the loose. Find him. Call us for the details. So what happens when the cops find Paul Walker? They're like, okay, you're going undercover. Gee, maybe you shouldn't have put his picture on the cover of a newspaper calling him a cop.
Not to split hairs or anything, but in the first one, they made it quite clear that they weren't sure what Paul Walker was going to do. They were like, look, we understand you don't, you're having a crisis here. Whatever. It's fine. There's like, there is a scene that is exactly like that. They're like, oh, I don't know. You know, you gotta follow your heart, man.
Even if you wanna let him go, let him go. If you like his sister, then let him go. I don't know, whatever.
Did that or did that not happen? I'm almost positive something like that happened.
Paul Walker is the worst police officer in the history of police officers in movies.
But that's what makes it so great.
These movies defy logic. They make no sense.
Yes, and I will say, I will reveal my hand early. I was expecting that, because this one has the reputation as being the shit one.
Yeah, this is the one that really let people down, I think.
I was dreading watching this one, because I knew everybody hates 2. Everybody says, like, oh, 3 is where it kind of starts to turn around. Like, oh, yeah, no, 1's, oh, but 2's a really bad one. So I was dreading watching this one. I thought this one, I have problems with it, but I found this one, and I watched this one maybe, like, 2.5 weeks ago, and I remember so little of it, because it's really not very, like, affecting. But I really enjoyed watching this one.
Me too.
Because it's ridiculous fun.
It's a lot of fun. It's much more fun than the first one, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
It gets itself a little more right away. The colors. This is directed by John Singleton. Not known for, you know, these kinds of, like, fun films. But this, like, has a real lightness to it.
I mean, the entire opening scene is just a video game. It's a straight up. You're just watching a video game.
Yeah.
Like, the all the drivers match their cars, and they have, like, ridiculous personalities, and, like, you literally just watch them drive as if they're in a video game, and it's so much fun. Yeah. I love it.
My biggest disappointment, though, is I found, we had, what is it, it's Cole Hauser as the villain.
Yeah.
Yes, it's Carter.
Boring.
Right?
And I assume the villains get better in these movies, because how can they not? Like there's just so, like, there's so much room for a villain to have a, like, to be really cool in a Fast and the Furious movie. And he's just really dull.
He is. And is he sometimes trying to do some kind of Latino accent?
Oh, I thought he was supposed to be, like, Italian.
Oh, no. I don't know what he was doing. It was so bad.
He's definitely Latino.
But he's got red hair. Are there redheaded Latinos?
I thought, like, somebody broke a pen into his head and, like, rubbed in the black ink. It looked really bad.
No, he's definitely doing a Latino thing. Yeah. That's why Eva Mendez works as his...
Well, yeah, right?
Yeah.
Here's something I love about this movie is, like, when Paul Walker I think it's Paul Walker tells the, like, James Remar, who, James Remar, everybody, holla that.
I am. He looks real good in this movie, too.
Love him.
when he tells them that, like, oh, I think Eva Mendez is compromised, she's sleeping with him. Well, okay, how the fuck else do you get, like, inside of a major drug lord's venture? Like, you're a hot chick, you were sent here to be undercover, obviously you gotta sleep with him, right? Am I wrong about this?
No, that's clearly what you do. It's driving me nuts that we didn't synopsize it.
Okay, Erica,
can we synopsize it?
Oh, I would. I think it would be helpful, considering I don't really know what this movie was about.
So, basically, the FBI recruits Paul Walker to...
After a national manhunt where they, yes, you know, every citizen in the country looking for him.
Which isn't actually in the movie. It's some pretend thing that Emily made up.
It's on the DVD. The legal people would know.
So the FBI brings in Paul Walker to go in undercover with Eva Mendez, who's been undercover for a year with this Miami drug exporter, and in exchange for infiltrating and getting this guy caught, then he's going to get a clean record. And originally the FBI tries to assign him a driver, and Paul Walker is like, blah, 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 fancy car terms. Yeah. And the guy's like, I don't know. And he's like, yeah, I can't drive with this guy.
This
so he gets
even
them.
He's lighter than Paul Walker.
Exactly. He's awful. So Paul Walker gets them to go and get his friend who's under house arrest, Roman Pierce, a.k.a. Yes. Tyrese Gibson, the best
the
part
very
of the movie.
Handsome Tyrese.
Yep. And the two of them.
And gratuitous shirt off moment.
Right?
Yes.
What's going on there? But. This one was a lot more man-heavy than the first one was.
Yeah, we basically just have Eva Mendez and Devin Okoye.
Yeah, she's not even in it that much, which is super disappointing.
Her belly isn't a lot, though.
Her belly isn't a lot. Yeah.
She's so cute. I like her.
And her face
thank you for explaining that movie to me, Erica.
No problem. So, yeah, so they infiltrate and they drive for him, and, yeah, that's what happens.
Talk about some convoluted shit, though. They're doing some stuff that just does not seem to make much sense.
Like the job audition.
Yeah.
Like, when you hire someone, there's a lot of ways you could hire them. You could check their resume. You could call their last place of employment. Or you can have a really, really complicated system where they have to go reclaim your car.
No, not your car. The package from the glove box.
Package in the glove box. But it's like...
From the impound lot.
But it's like you have an audition where it's like open call, people who like to drive. And, like, 20 people with cars show up, and then some of them die.
Yeah, that's fucking dangerous shit, man. That's why you don't want to get into this.
Carter needed good drivers. He needed people who were going to drive fast and furious.
That's what it said in the ad. Looking for...
Drivers wanted fast and furious. Must be fast and furious.
Yes, please come to the open call Friday, March 6th.
At my personal home address.
Please don't come if you're police.
I'm a drug exporter.
All of these things are pretty much true.
Yeah. This is why I wanted to cover these movies. This is the best part of my week right now.
And that's the thing, is this, like, to me, the first one just doesn't have that factor, whereas this one, exactly what you're saying, like, he has a job audition for drivers.
But it's a really exciting action scene.
It is actually pretty cool, and, like, to me in the first one, I don't find the car scenes that exciting. Like, they're very convoluted, whereas in this one, I understand a little more of what they're doing, so, like, I can kind of figure out things a little better. And again, I'm also kind of spatially challenged when it comes to cars, because I drive, like, twice a year.
Well, I still don't understand how they I drive stick shift, and they shift so many times, and I'm like, what are you doing? You there's only five gears. I don't understand where you're shifting
because of the NOS.
Well,
so even I don't understand that part, but I let it go.
God, Emily.
Do you understand the ejecto cito?
I do.
Do you have one? Because I ride in your car a lot. I would really like... Just tell me if you're going to do that one day.
Yes, I have a secret ejector seat just for Emily.
Yes.
With a half tank of NOS under it.
Nice. Has anybody ever... Now, okay, we have a great character actor stops by, Mark Boone Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Who you'll know from Sons of Anarchy and
Batman. Batman. You know, its technical name, Batman.
Anything else where you need, like, kind of like a really dirty-looking middle-aged dude?
Yeah, talk about convoluted. All right, let me just say that.
I'm going to talk about the torture scene, right? Because I don't understand how this works.
No, it doesn't. It takes too much time. It yields little results. Just make shallow cuts along his stomach, and then you'll freak him out, and maybe he might bleed to death. He might pass out.
Erica, can you explain the torture scene?
Yes, absolutely. Emily, it happens in Game of Thrones. Where are you right now?
Well, honey, I'm done with Game of Thrones. I've read it all.
No. I don't mean that. I mean, like, in your head, where are you? Like, what don't you understand? They do the exact same thing in Game of Thrones.
So they take Mark Boone Jr. and they put a rat on his belly and they put a bucket over the rat.
Yeah.
And then they light a blowtorch to make the rat start to nibble, I guess.
Yeah, he freaks out. The rat freaks the fuck out.
Right. Yeah, because it's like, it's getting hot in here. I'm going to burn alive. There's no place for me to go except to burrow into this nice, soft area.
So I'm going to scratch lightly at his stomach while they do that for 2 minutes and people get bored.
So now, but here's the other thing. So now they're doing this with, like, in the private club, and Mark Boone Jr. is, like, right there. He's a dirty cop. And so they're trying to get him to do this thing for him. And he's like, no, no, no. And then once the rat starts chewing on him, he's like, okay, I'll do anything you want. So then, by do anything you want, it's like 2 days later, and Mark Boone Jr. is like at his job, being a cop, and he's supposed to do what he's supposed to do for them. But at this point, he's just on his own. There's no rat there. There's none of Cole Hauser's people are there. Like, all he has to do is what he does in the movie, spoiler alert, which is not do what he told the bad guy he was going to do. Because you can't torture someone and then expect a week later for them to be like, okay, I'll, you tortured it out of me. No, because it's a week later, he's got his gun now. He's not afraid of a rat anymore. Right? Like, it's really poor planning from a torture perspective.
Look, man, that whole thing didn't make any sense.
If it was like, I'm going to kidnap your cat and hold him for ransom, and I have your cat in a room with a rat over his nether regions, and I'm not going to free that cat until you do this. That makes sense. But a week later, it does not make sense.
I think it's implied by the craziness of
the rat is still there.
No. That's not what I'm saying. I think this lunatic being like, I'm going to use a rat and a bucket to torture you. I think it's pretty much implied that if you don't do what I want, I'm going to come find you and kill you.
But you know what else is implied is, if I don't do what you want, you get arrested and go to jail, and then you can't put rats on my belly anymore.
Not necessarily, though. He almost got away. It wasn't guaranteed that if he didn't do what he wanted, that Carter was going to get arrested. Because he let the wrong place leak. He didn't count on Brian and Roman being able to stop him. So he would have gotten away if not for the two of them.
So you're saying you condone rat blowtorch torture, is what you're saying. You're saying it works. It gets a job done.
I think it's ineffective.
But I'm saying it made the scene way more interesting than if you were just like, we're going to cut you.
But you even see once he moves the bucket, he didn't really do much damage.
Well, I blame the makeup department for that.
Well, they could have made it look like at least he had like bites or nibbles or something. He had like two scratches. Psh, nothing.
I still think it was more interesting to watch. And I think it was like, I don't know.
I'm getting
it's better in these movies.
Way too much joy out of Erica defending the scene. I just really want to keep shitting on it. So she'll keep defending it.
I just like this movie. I just want to defend it.
Oh, it's a good movie. It's a fun movie.
I just have a lot of questions. Like early on in the movie, when Ludacris, who you might remember from such things as Law and Order SVU,
Among other things.
No, Law and Order SVU. So he's running this race and
not his rapping career.
What rapping career? He doesn't do that on SVU when he plays Finn Tutuola's like evil seed nephew. Very important episode, cliffhanger episode in season 12. So Ludacris is running this race and they put 30, first of all, I didn't understand 35 large. What does that mean? Is that 35,000, 3,500?
I thought it was 35,000.
Yeah, I think it's 1,000.
Okay. And so another, but
which is
like,
a lot of money.
So, but as soon as they say that, one of the dudes just takes out of his pocket something in a rubber band and gives it to them. Do people in Florida carry around in rubber bands, like denominations of 35,000? Because I think what he did. It was really impressive.
If you're going to be in a street race, you do.
I think you need to be prepared if that's like what you're going to do.
It's like in movies when people go on dates and it's like, okay, dinner tomorrow night. And that's the end of the conversation. And it's like, wait, but where are you eating? What time? What kind of food? Do I have to check my allergies? Do I have to know what kind of dress code there is? Like, it was one of those moments of just.
So
like,
you wanted him to write a check. Basically.
Or to, like, reach in his pocket and count out the money, right?
But
like,
how
would that have change of a...
No, man, you don't flash your money like that. What's wrong with you?
Well, how do you just... So, but what if they was like...
Nah, man, he knew.
What if he said 25 large?
He would have taken out a bundle and a half.
Had to have a scene where he would have had to take out...
Well, I'll keep making up stories and defending this shit. Don't you worry. Originally, they actually raised the stakes when Brian got there. So he might have already collected one amount of money, say 15 grand. So he might have just had a denominations of 10 grand rolled in his pockets. So he, or 20 grand. So he might have just taken out one of those to add to the original 15, maybe.
Maybe, huh?
Maybe.
I like that. I think it works. Mm-hmm. Let's put it in writing.
That's what happened. Damn it.
Now, we do not have Michelle Rodriguez in this movie.
We do not.
We do not. But we do have Eva Mendes. Eva or Ava?
I thought it was Ava.
I think it's Ava.
All right, we'll say Ava.
I don't know. I could be wrong, though.
And I feel like she's a little underused. I think it's
like, sure.
And I mean, I don't know if she doesn't come back, right? In the series?
I don't know. Does
no,
she?
I know way too much.
Oh, see, I know nothing other than like at some point Vin Diesel's back and at some point everybody's back. I don't know if does James Remar come back?
I don't think so. Oh.
That I don't think he does.
He doesn't really play that much of a role.
But I like it. Like, he's just such the blatant dick of like everything he says in this movie is exactly what you know a character has to say.
Yeah. Did you know Eva Mendes was in a Children of the Corn movie?
Oh, it's part 4, right?
Or part
part 4
v.
is Naomi Watts.
It's part, five. Yeah, part V, yep. Fields of Terror.
Yeah, that one's really boring. Mm,
I want to watch it.
No, see, to me, 3 is actually really fun. It's the one in the city. 4 is the one, I think, with Naomi Watts. And that one's not terrible, just because Naomi Watts is pretty good. I remember, I feel like from 5 on, they're just really boring.
Mm. It's got a good cast, though. Just
There's
saying.
A few other people in that one, too, I think. Right?
Yeah. David Carradine, Fred Williamson.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I don't remember him in that one.
Taking it for the show.
Hey. Oh, Erica, want to come back for that one?
Is this Children of the Corn cast now?
Yeah. Yes. We'll do that. Those. Oh, no. I don't want to say that. Never mind.
No.
Pretend I never mentioned it. But yes, I think what you're saying is Eva Mendes was boring. That's what you were saying.
I like the idea of her character.
Yeah, but she didn't do anything.
But she didn't get to do anything. Yeah.
She had absolutely no work to do at all.
Look hot. That was her job.
But when you have like pretty interesting ladies in the first one,
yeah, definitely.
And then you transition to this one broad who they're giving shit for boning this dude, and then wait, she starts boning. That's what I don't understand,
she
Erica.
Bone him, but she wants to bone.
You need to explain to me.
Yeah, and
I think they were fucking. Were they fucking?
Oh my
Erica?
God.
Yeah, and why?
I feel so attacked. Oh my goodness.
Can we say the choice between Paul Walker or Tyrese? She saw Tyrese without his shirt on. Come on. Who is this woman? Erica, talk.
I don't know. Apparently there's something really appealing about Dirty Cop Brian O'Connor.
Good answer.
I'm the only one who sees it in this trio of ladies.
Yeah, I don't get the appeal. I really don't.
But they weren't having sex, or they were? Because I was convinced they were.
She wanted to.
She wanted to, but they weren't.
But how did she end up at his houseboat that morning? Wasn't that weird?
She snuck. Well, it was a little weird. She snuck out to like she pretended to leave the house and snuck out to warn him that Carter was going to kill them no matter what they did.
But didn't there feel like there was something missing? Like all of a sudden they were kissing. Like there was a scene, and they were kissing, and then you were like, "Wait, what?" I don't know. Maybe it was.
And she was like, wet. I think she like swam.
That's what I didn't. Yes, I had.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a little iffy on that scene.
Did she swim from?
I think she swam up to the boat because she gets in his boat and like her hair is all wet. And I'm like, wait, what?
Oh man, maybe I should get the disc to see the deleted scenes. That's a good point.
Is there a deleted little like canoe chase? Because that would be pretty good.
That'd be funny.
Oh man.
Yeah, I don't know. That scene is weird, but I just roll with it and pretend it didn't happen.
Okay, cool. Well, good. That's what I did. So now I feel a lot better.
I'm like, oh, look, she's warning them. How nice.
Does Tyrese get a love interest soon? Because he comes back,
me.
Right?
Tyrese comes back, yeah.
Okay, good. Because he's delightful in this movie. I don't know that I'd ever seen him in anything other than, like, when he was on America's Next Top Model a couple of times. but he's just really fun, and he's having fun. He's really charismatic. And yep. I found him the highlight easily of this movie.
He is the best part of this movie. Yeah.
Well, are you hungry? Because we hungry. It's my favorite part.
I forgot that you were really excited to say that.
I was. I'm sorry.
Well, that's the thing. Like I said, like very little of this movie stuck in my head. Because it is very forgettable. It's very lightweight. Nobody that you care about at any point or like fear dies. Right? Like there's like two deaths that I caught or one death. And it's like... just dudes at the car audition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, compared to the first one,
it's not a weighty film.
No. And I mean, the first film wasn't, but it kind of tried to be. And characters.
Yeah, there were implications to actions and shit.
Yeah. And like the whole, like, Vin Diesel, just, what is it? Like, a drive, one lane.
I live my life a quarter mile at a time.
No, but you gotta do your best
with
Diesel voice. All the
best. Oh man,
I live my life a quarter mile at a time.
Good. Wait, I'm gonna put some water in my mouth. Try this. I live my life one quarter mile at a time.
That was really accurate, though. That's almost not funny. It's so accurate.
I just spilled. I drooled water all over my shirt for you, ladies. That's right.
Thank you.
I think it's better if I had, like, food in my mouth, but there's no food around here, and all, like, the closest thing is, like, a dollar bill, which is just disgusting, so that doesn't work.
You know, wait, I'm trying to think of who told this story. I feel like I've told you this story before. It might have been Kevin Smith on Hollywood Babylon podcast, was talking about Vin Diesel, and he was talking about how he was, like, in the studio when Vin Diesel was recording his lines for Iron Giant.
Uh-huh.
And the line is basically, like, tree. And he said that, like, Vin Diesel did it. Like, he got really serious before he did the line. Like, you know, he, like, prepped for the line. He was like, all right, I'm ready. And he did the line. And then he was like, wait, I want to go again. I want to do a second take. And he preps again and, like, gets ready and he goes to deliver the line and he says it the exact same way. And he's like, I felt much better about that one. I think that one was it. That was it. We got it. And like,
we got
that
it, man. Just, we got it. I'm done for the day.
Makes me happy that he took
pretty good.
Takes that all so seriously.
He's very serious. He's a very serious gentleman.
It's craft, yo. It's craft. One quarter mile at a time.
Live my life a quarter mile at a time, man.
So I mean, I was concerned because as much as I wasn't a fan of the first movie, I did think Vin Diesel and Michelle Rodriguez was really the best part of the first movie. So I was concerned this being the Vin Diesel-less one. But I think Tyrese more than makes up for it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. He's super fun.
Yeah. And there's a boat car at the end.
Oh, man.
Yep. Which I was kind of on board with. Pun intended.
Can we talk about, like, the best part in the whole movie when they pull into those garages during the big chase scene?
You know what? That was pretty cool.
And then they open all the garages and all the cars come out and it's like scramble and they can't find them. Oh, it's so good.
Oh, she was so cute and childlike in that moment. That was adorable.
But it's such a fun scene.
No, it really is. This movie's a lot of fun.
It is fun. Yeah.
they're like they're being chased by two different helicopters because like the FBI is tracking them and the city police are tracking them, and they're like the city police are interfering with the FBI investigation, but they have this whole plan that the FBI doesn't know about. It's just really a fun scene to me.
Oh, I see.
all their racing buddies together, and they're like, we're gonna confuse the cops.
It's a shame they couldn't communicate a little bit better.
Well, it's also interesting how they're actually able to communicate quite well considering they're driving like 200 miles an hour.
Oh, I just meant the different organizations.
Oh.
But you're right. They do talk to each other an awful lot considering.
They're
like in Seabiscuit when like Tobey Maguire's on a horse in a horse race where the horse is running really fast, but he's like totally talking to the dude next to him about like, how you doing? I'm good. Okay, I'm going to go now. Like, no, that's not how horse racing works.
But Brian and Roman are bros. They came up together, man. They don't have to hear each other to know what the other one's saying.
Oh, man.
Have I given this too much thought?
No, you're right.
I don't know if it's possible to give too much thought to this movie, because it's complicated in a lot of ways you don't expect it to be.
I like it. I think it's a good time.
Are there still things you're confused about, Emily? Do you need more help?
I do need to see it again. I still feel a little unsure about some of this stuff.
No,
I'm not kidding.
It's funny though, when I look through my questions, my notes, and I have so many question marks, most of them have been answered. But it's like, yes, what does 35 large mean? Question mark. Do people keep that amount in a rubber band?
Maybe you need to see it again.
I think so.
And put the pieces together for yourself, because I need to.
And you can make a drinking game out of how many times characters nod to each other.
Oh, that sounds fun.
There's a lot of nodding. Like, they don't need to talk, they just nod.
Was this before or after Ocean's 11?
Ooh.
I think it was after.
Check. This movie was 2003.
Yeah, that was 2001. Okay. Damn it. I wanted to try and claim that Tyrese started the eating in every scene thing, but he just stole it from Brad Pitt.
Or you could say that was like Elaine on Seinfeld started that. Give credit to where it's due, Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Okay, I apologize. I didn't watch Seinfeld, so I wasn't aware.
Oh, that's right. We've talked about this before.
We have.
Yeah. Still find that odd. But anyway, moving on from that uncomfortable moment in our podcast.
Yeah, you guys, I could cut the tension with a knife right there.
Don't make us talk about Lost either, because...
Well, that would be all, yeah. Yeah, this could get ugly pretty fast. Like, ugly as in Mark Boone Jr. getting rat-nibbled on, ain't got nothing on that, so...
No, that's pretty ugly.
Back away. All right, well, what more do we have to say? Do we have more to say, or are we, you know... Oh, one thing I wanted to say. When James Remar kind of, like, almost blows their cover because he's chasing after them... Because he's afraid that Paul Walker is running.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what are you doing? Are you crazy? And it's like, no. Why shouldn't he think that? Because he did it before. Right?
This is why this movie kind of confuses me. Because sometimes I don't understand everyone else's reactions. Because I'm like, oh, yeah, I get it. Wait a second. Why is everybody acting like that now?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, but there was no reason for him to go after him because they had the cars wired with GPS. Like, they would know where they are at any time. So why did he have to run out of the office and go chase after them and meet them when they stopped? Like, they were stopped in one place. There was no need for you to pull up and be like, why are you running? Because they weren't anymore.
Does that clear it up for you, Emily?
Somebody's watched this movie more than once, I see.
Dude, I've only seen it twice, actually.
Well, definitely have more comprehension than I do.
I'm just a very logical thinker.
Yeah, I just get very fixated on, like, things that confuse me, like what 35 large meant. That really was, like, upsetting me.
I'm sorry you're so stressed out about
this.
It's
okay. It's not you. It's me. It's something I have to work through. It's the details. I'm okay. Those are my notes. Christine, do you have more questions to ask Erica?
No, I really wish, like, I watched the first one and I got super excited, so I immediately watched the second one, and that was a while ago now. I should have waited.
Yeah,
it was really fun. I was like, yeah, let's watch them all.
Right.
I'm glad I have seen the third one a bunch of times, though, because it used to always be on cable. So
they're always on cable.
But I think I've seen the first one more than once, because I think I saw it when it came out. The second one I've only seen twice. The third one I've only seen once, and I think the fourth and fifth one the fifth one I've seen twice, because Mike and I kind of were watching the trailer for the fifth one, and we were like, I really want to watch that. So we watched it, and we were like, this was so good. Let's go back and watch the whole series. And that's when it all started.
Ah, and a legend was born.
Yeah, I'm excited to rewatch the fifth one. And guys, I haven't seen the sixth one yet, so we need to get to that soon.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
Let's make this happen.
Okay, so on that note then, shall we rate it?
Sure.
All right, so quality of film. I would say that I would personally give the first film, as far as quality of film, probably like a 5.5. Like, uh-huh. I think it's just kind of a very average movie to me. Whereas this one, I mean, it's ridiculous, but it is fun. So I would probably say for quality of film, I'm going to go 7.25.
Yeah. I was gonna do 7. I thought that was too high. I'm glad you went high.
I have no sense.
Saving Private Ryan. 7.
I wasn't sure I gave it lower than Saving Private Ryan.
Well, they're right on par with each other.
I'm gonna go 7.5.
Yep. Solid scores.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, now that I'm thinking of it, I guess I'd probably more of like a 7 and then quality of life 7.5.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll amend mine and say that. Quality of life, Christine?
Probably like an 8. It actually, it's goofy and silly and fun, but it kind of knows what it is, and I have to respect it for that. It does what it's doing pretty well.
I agree.
Erica? Yeah. Quality of life, I was also going to say 8. Because it's super enjoyable.
All right. Well, Erica, you will definitely come back to us in, I don't know, a couple of episodes when we move on to Tokyo Drift.
Yeah. I'm here when you guys are ready, man.
What do we pair with that one? You guys would know. I haven't seen it, so I don't know what makes sense.
Oh, let's do Drive Angry.
Oh.
Why did I do that?
I don't know, but it sounded... I'm not arguing with it.
We were just talking about Drive Angry.
We were just talking about Drive Angry, and it was just on TV. Erica, did you see Drive Angry?
I have not. I intended to, and then I never did.
Okay. Well, I've seen it like 6 times, and I own the Blu-ray, so come over and watch it with me.
Oh, okay. I'll just hop in the car. I'll be right there.
Well, if you're driving at the speed, if you're driving fast and furiously, you'll be there in like what, 3 hours?
Or 3 yep. days, something like that.
Load up on the NOS, and you're good.
All you right. guys... I totally forgot Zachary Ty Bryan is in Tokyo Drift.
Oh my
yeah!
God.
Yeah!
What?
It's so exciting!
Whoa, you can carry the rages, Zachary Ty Bryan?
Yes!
Whoa, okay. All right.
We can always cover that this time because I finally got it. And then I can send it back to you because I'm a terrible friend.
Oh, that's right. Oh.
We'll discuss it and we'll surprise.
Okay. So yeah, there are options then. So we'll think about both. Before we exit, though, first, Netflix Instant Watch picks, ladies, do we have them?
I do. Okay.
I have something to say, yes.
Okay.
Oh, good.
Erica, what do you have to say?
Oh, well, I'm going to say that I think you guys are being selective and only saying Netflix Instant picks.
Ooh.
So I'm going to go with a... Amazon Prime Instant
Pick.
Oh,
thank you. I never use mine. What would I watch, please?
Well, it's kind of a twofer, which is in way a fourfer. Everybody, all 3 seasons of Veronica Mars are on Amazon Prime, and everybody yeah, right. should watch them and then download the new Veronica Mars movie, which is available in iTunes and on Amazon and basically everywhere except Netflix right now, because it was so good.
Oh, was it? I need to... fucking get on that. Oh, thank you.
I really enjoyed it a lot. Like, if you like the show and you enjoyed the show and you remember, like, enough of the show.
Man, then... I'm a Kickstarter backer. I remember that shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn straight. Then why haven't you watched it yet?
I don't know, because I'm injured.
Did so you donate injured. Enough to get the digital download?
No, I just got the t-shirt.
Oh, okay. I went one step above that. I got the digital download. So I had it on Friday and then technically I watched it on Saturday, but I took someone who hadn't seen it to see it on Monday and didn't tell them I watched it.
Oh, I see. Well, I'm glad it was good. I'm really looking forward to it.
I very much so enjoyed it. Like, there was plenty of, like, it was a good story, and it had enough, it felt enough like the show to feel satisfied by it.
Oh, that's good. Well, I will watch it sooner than rather than later, and I will
talk about it next time I'm on.
Yay!
Oh, and he's writing his book. He's doing, Rob Thomas is doing Canon Books. That one of the first one comes out next Tuesday. I pre-ordered it.
Oh, neat. So, oh, geez, you really got your finger on the pulse.
Yes, I am recommending three different things: the series, the movie, and the book. They're all on Amazon. Everyone go.
Very nice.
Oh, do you want me to go?
Sure, yeah.
I probably recommend this already, but I'm recommending it again because I rewatched it, you know, basically because I wanted to sit and cry for 2 hours. But everybody should watch Take This Waltz.
Oh, yeah.
you've seen it, right?
Yeah, I watched it not too long ago, and I watched it on Instant, and oh, it's so fucking good.
I didn't realize it was still on Instant, and I was clicking by, like, watch it again, which I don't typically go around there. And I was like, oh, this is still on here? Do I really want to do this? And I just hit play and instantly just sobbed.
Yeah. Christine, so. Erica, did you see this?
No.
It's, you should watch it. Seth Rogen.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Michelle Williams, Sarah Silverman. Yep. Really good in it.
Amazing.
It's just a kind of quiet relationship movie, is one way to put it. It's directed by Sarah Polley, my girl crush. It's so good. It really is good. I don't know. I'd have to be in a particular mood to watch that again.
I was in the mood where I just felt like feeling bad.
Like, it's not, like you say that, but it's not a complete downer. Like, it's...
I feel like it is for me.
For some characters it is, I guess.
For me it is. It hits a little too close to home in certain areas. So I just basically cry through the entire thing.
Yeah.
But it is amazing.
So good. It really is.
It's quiet and contemplative, and no one's the bad guy, but yet, you know, everybody's at fault, kind of. It's really an interesting take on a very common situation that I feel like movies often get wrong.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Is Seth Rogen in a relationship with Michelle Williams in it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm going to have a problem with that.
No, it makes
He looks
sense.
So handsome.
He's always so handsome.
I adore him. He's my boyfriend. He's on my wall. I'm looking at him right now. It's her that I don't always like.
Oh, she's fantastic. She makes very interesting choices.
I feel like...
Oh, you'll know, hate her in this movie. The first time I saw her, I hated her.
I'm seeing her in Cabaret in a month.
Ooh, that's exciting.
But I don't always love her. Like, I'm very picky about her and when I like her and when I don't.
When do you like her? Give me a movie you liked her in.
Let me look at her IMDb. I don't know. I think it started with Dawson's Creek because I didn't like Jen.
Oh,
I was
God,
a
God, were you team Joey? I hated Joey.
Oh, I was. I enjoyed, well, I don't know if enjoy is the right word, but I didn't mind Blue Valentine.
Okay, well, you might, I mean, if anybody's the bad, oh God, to say that is awful, but if anybody could be easily labeled the bad guy in this relationship movie, it's going to be her. But the things that happen are really relatable, and if you get mad at her for them, you kind of have to get mad at, like, almost everybody ever, because they're things that everybody does. Mm-hmm. It's just really interesting, and I think she wears it really well. Like, she doesn't make you hate her, but you see the villainous things that she's kind of doing. I don't know. I recommend it highly.
Yeah, well, and I second that.
It's Seth Rogen, so I'll absolutely watch it. So,
yeah,
I really don't know why I didn't know about it.
Hmm. It was a little release. Didn't get much fanfare.
P.S. Not to throw us off track again, but can you guys, like, not wait for The Neighbors to come out with Zac Efron and Seth Rogen in the same film?
I don't know anything about that, but I really like Zac Efron.
Oh, my God. I actually thought of you when the trailer was on when I went to go see Veronica Mars, because I was like, this is so much Zac Efron with his shirt off. Christine's really going to like this.
I love Zac Efron.
I do, too. I adore him. He's adorable. Do you know about the time we saw fake Zac Efron in the city?
Was it somebody that looked just like Zac Efron?
It was literally a celebrity impersonator doing Zac Efron, but he was like walking around Times Square with all these girls following him and like trying to create a hubbub. But it was like right after Zac Efron got out of rehab. So it was like, clearly you're not Zac Efron. It was really weird. But there were girls who were running all over and tweeting. Like we checked Twitter because we were like, that's not really him. And it was like all these girls tweeting, oh my God, Zac Efron. And then it was pretty apparent that there were like hired girls also following him.
Oh, that's so weird.
To shout and be like, blah, 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 you screwed things up with whatever girl he was dating. I don't remember who it was. But watch the trailer for The Neighbors. It's a comedy and it looks like it's going to be a really fun time. Rose Byrne is in it too.
Oh, I like that.
Who I love. Add it to radar. Boom.
Interesting. I guess let me give in my Netflix pick, which has nothing to do with Seth Rogen, I'm sorry, or Zac Efron.
Sad.
I know.
It is a film from 1978, and it's British, and it's a horror movie. I don't know how I never heard of it, called Killer's Moon.
What?
It's amazing. It's very British. It's very dry. It's sort of like a Clockwork Orangey at one point. The whole concept is there's like this boarding school of British girls who get stuck in a hotel in the middle of nowhere. And meanwhile, it's sort of like Clown House in a way too, because there's four men from an insane asylum who escape, but they were part of an experiment where it was the therapy that was supposed to make them think they were living in a dream. So they just think they're living in a dream. So they're all about killing people, but they don't realize that they're in a dream. And it's really weird and funny, and I recommend it.
Okay.
All right, then.
It's very different from either of your films.
Well, I've never even heard of that. I've never even seen it come up on my...
That was the thing, that it's 78, so it's, like, at a time when you think it would have been... Because it's very, like, it's a little rapey. By a little, I mean it's a lot rapey.
Okay, well, you know, you had me at a little rapey.
It's apparently written by, like, the director's sister is a woman named Faye Weldon, who's, I had not heard of her, but apparently she's fairly well known as a very vocal essayist and feminist.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie's really fascinating because you can't tell if it's tongue-in-cheek or not. Like, there's dialogue where after one of the girls is raped, this other girl says to her, like, oh, so what? You were raped. Just, I won't tell anybody, you don't tell anybody, and hopefully if we survive tonight, we'll grow up, get married, and become mothers. Like, so, but I can't tell. Like, and I really assumed it was very just tongue-in-cheek and meant to be really funny, but then, like, some Googling is, like, this woman, Faye Weldon, has, like, written essays about how rape is a really, like, overrated crime and all this stuff, so...
Oh, wow.
Weird, and you have to watch it to figure out where you stand on it. But it's both really funny and occasionally disturbing, but really just entertaining, aside from the rape, unless you're Christine and that's what you like in your movies.
Oh God, judge, let's G be judged or whatever. Whatever,
so anyway,
that thing is.
Just check it out. So now on to, now the next time we're going to put a little space in between our Glee Cast and Furious episodes, I think.
Up to you guys.
Was that a question? I couldn't tell.
I don't know if I could survive, like, marathoning the Fast and the Furious movies. That's why I like to put some space in between.
All right, we're putting space.
But on the next episode, we did decide what we're going to cover.
Yeah.
Okay. Erica, if you have interest, please let us know, and I'm sure it's fun if you come sit in. We picked... I always want to say Neil Marshall, but it's not Neil Marshall. It's Neil Jordan's.
Yes.
A recent film that a lot of people...
I don't know how to say it. How do you say it?
I think it's Byzantium.
Okay, that movie.
Byzantium is the vampire film with Saoirse Ronan and Gemma Arterton.
Woo!
Anybody's name.
So excited.
Yeah, so that's a new vampire film and stuff. A lot of people have talked about it, so we're going to talk about it. And we're going to pair that with another sort of, you know, we got werewolves, we got Neil Jordan. So we're going to do, instead of werewolves, we're going to do... Oh,
wait,
damn it.
You said it the wrong way.
I fucked it all up.
Smooth
way to go.
I suck today. We are going to pair vampires with werewolves and most importantly with Angela Lansbury in Neil Jordan's The Company of Wolves.
Do you know what year that was off the top of your head?
I want to say 84, but I might be wrong.
I thought it was earlier in the 80s. I've always wanted to see it, and I never have.
I saw it years ago. I'm really excited to rewatch it, mostly for Angela Lansbury, but also for, like, discussion and stuff. So that will be in a few weeks or so when we get to it. And I guess about it. Talk to us on Facebook.
Yeah.
Tweet us if we ever check Twitter at Feminine Podcast. Erica?
I'll try to check it later.
I occasionally do. Erica, where can the folks find you?
On Facebook,
I guess. Do you want to drop sexy hints where, like, you're leading them up the wrong tree?
I never sign on Twitter, so don't bother to find me there. I'm in the Feminine Critique group, so you can find me on Facebook.
All right, so if you want to stalk Erica, that's the best place to do it.
Yeah, you know what? Just send me a message. I'll make sure she gets it.
Oh, thank you, Christine.
I'll make sure it's worthy of her time.
Thank you. Can I hire you as my secretary now?
Yes, absolutely.
Perfect. I'm also just going to put out there that Fast and the Furious 1, 2, and 3, are the Blu-ray, DVD, and digital copy are only $11.49 on Amazon. Just still very.
If you're into getting your media legally,
have they not put out like a giant set?
No, they haven't.
They have sets, but they're
not a comprehensive
expensive
one because they're still making them. I'm not buying it until I get.
Yeah, of course you wouldn't buy it, but there is a set.
I'm sorry.
God, there's a 1 through 6, but 7 is in production. So why would you buy the?
Why would you do that? Exactly. That's like, why did you buy the individual seasons of Buffy? Everybody just wait until it came out in the box set.
I think I still got mine cheaper by doing it that way.
Really?
I got all of mine on sale for, I think, like, either...
But don't you want the pretty box?
No, and actually, even a problem, I refused to buy season 1 of Buffy because it was the same price as all the other seasons, and season 1 is, like, half...
It is so tiny, very right.
So I actually have a very incomplete set. But now it's on Instant Watch, so it's fine.
Okay.
I have... the separate seasons for sale from my tenant, if anyone would like to purchase them from me. Because I own the Chosen collection and I don't need her DVDs.
Yeah, because Erica knows what's up and Emily doesn't.
Yeah. I also have Angel, but those I have separately because I bought them on eBay.
Oh, that was thrifty.
What do you think of that, Christine, huh?
I think it's thrifty, okay? I have the box set of that one, too, though, so I don't know. Well,
yeah, I bought it before the box set was out because I wanted to... I had watched a couple of seasons, and I was like, I really want to finish watching it, so I just bought them all on eBay.
Yeah.
I'm sad about it now. I'm not happy. I'm not thrilled about it, so...
You know what? That's kind of how I feel. Let's not get into this because I'll just keep talking.
We're just going to sit here and talk the rest of the night. So.
The moral of the story is you guys all own Buffy. Some of you own multiple copies, and that's awesome.
Because of this, we live in an okay world, folks. Where do we go from here? Where do we go from here?
The battle's done. And we kind of won, so we sound our victory cheer. Where do we go from here?
Why is the path unclear when we know all?